Good morning. The topic of my presentation is sorption kinetics of sulfonamide antimicrobials. And I did this research along with Craig Adams, Mike Meyer, and Dana Kalpin from USGS. All right. I'll give you the brief introduction about what particularly the sulfonamides antimicrobials are, what's the difference between the antibiotics and antimicrobials, sources and pathways, occurrence, and then I will talk about the sorption kinetics in parallel sampling as well as series sampling mode, and then followed by the results and discussion, and the acknowledgement, and I'll take your questions. All right. Antimicrobials is a general term that is used for any drug or chemicals or, for that matter, any substance which may have some chemical properties. Antibiotics, on the other hand, is a type of antimicrobials made from mold or bacterium that kills or slows the growth. It means antibiotics can be bactericidal or bacteriostatic. Bactericidal means it will kill. Bacteriostatic means it will inhibit the growth, basically, and leading to annihilation. Antimicrobials and antibiotics both are used in human therapy as well as veterinary usages. Usages can be therapeutic, prophylactic, and or subtherapeutic. Therapeutic means if the person or the animal is sick and if you administer the antibiotics or antimicrobials, it will cure the disease. Prophylactic usages are more preventive in nature. It means you will administer the antimicrobials or antibiotics before the onset of the disease. And then comes subtherapeutic. This is the major issue. Subtherapeutic usages are not very well defined. And oftentimes those usages are targeted towards feed efficiency improvement, growth promotion, so on and so forth. For example, a therapeutic dose can be way too high. For example, 40 gram of certain medicine could be an effective dose at therapeutic level. Subtherapeutic dose could be 0.4 mg. It may be very well mixed with the feed itself. Nobody have understood why subtherapeutic dose promotes growth. It is very difficult to understand why it promotes growth or accelerates growth in animal species. It was a chance occurrence, I think, way back in 1950 that they realized that small addition of tetracycline promotes growth in chicken, and that was the beginning. Some of the major classes of antimicrobials are sulfonamides, macrolides, tetracyclines, beta-lactams, and aminoglycosides. Some of these classes are common in both human therapy as well as animal therapy. And it is because of this commonality we are trying to understand their we are concerned about their occurrence in the environment. For example, macrolides, in human therapy we use erythromycin, whereas in animal therapy tylosin is the one that is commonly used. And tylosin is the most popular antibiotics used at subtherapeutic level. How much is there? According to the CDC, nearly 22,000 tons of antibiotics produced in the United States, and nearly 50% is used in human therapy, and 40% is used in animal agriculture. There is no specific breakdown how much is being used. Of those 40%, there is no specific breakdown how much is being used therapeutically, subtherapeutically. Because oftentimes the animal production, animal facility owner, they just use the antibiotics, be at subtherapeutic level, be at therapeutic level, and they don't document that X amount of antibiotics is used therapeutically and Y amount of antibiotics used subtherapeutically. So where do they go? within one to two days of administration, nearly 90% is excreted back into the environment in terms of the fecal material, urine, and what you have. Oftentimes, the manure contains this partially metabolized antibiotics. Now, imagine 238,000 facilities producing 5 million tons of manure, which contains stress amount of antibiotics in it. So, once this manure with stress level of antibiotics in it is land applied, how do they behave? Are they amenable to degradation? Do they degrade or do they persist? Some of the studies reported that they are anaerobically non-biodegradable, but degrade under aerobic conditions. So it is there. They are very much stable in lagoon slurry. According to some of the abiotic studies, sulfonamides has been observed to be recalcitrant. And secondly, the soil encapsulated antibiotics are not amenable to photodegradation. It means soil can only penetrate up to certain depth, only around 1 centimeter. And as such, if the antibiotics have gone deeper beyond 1 centimeter, then they are not amenable to photodegradation or photolysis. How about sewage treatment plant? Well, some of the studies reported that the biodegradation is so slow that they may practically escape the sewage treatment plant. Again, a biodegradation studies on 25 major drugs, including sulfonamides, reported that they are non-biodegradable. This is one of the reconnaissance surveys that was carried in 2002. This was a very exhaustive survey carried by USGS in which they studied around 139 streams and reservoirs across the United States, and they reported that several of these streams were contaminated with drugs such as painkillers, hormones, blood pressure medicine, and antibiotics as well. This was the Associated Press investigative journalism story. They reported that nearly 46 million Americans are supplied with water that may have trace amount of antibiotics in it. So considering this background, considering the nature of usages, considering the poor amount of little information we have about their usages, their persistence in the environment, we decided to study the sorption kinetics, the ability of soil material to bind with, or the ability of the antibiotics to bind with soil material, and how does this sorption behavior is, we studied this sorption behavior over time in order to establish whether there is a linear relationship or what between the time and amount of time the antibiotics are in contact with the soil material. This is very important because oftentimes the sorption studies are conducted with 24 hours of equilibration time that is given. And this particular study also provides information about the interaction this particular antibiotics has with soil material. So we collected three soil samples from three different states, Iowa, Missouri, and North Carolina. We collected soil samples at five locations and at two depths. The samples were air-dried, sieved, and homogenized. We analyzed the soil samples, and you can notice that the pH covers the almost acidic to basically alkaline, and with percent organic carbon ranging from 1.03% to 2.07%. The textural soil classification of those three soil samples we studied showed that the soils belongs to, soils can be classified as loam, sandy loam, and loamy sand. Sandy loam is from Iowa, and loam is from Missouri, and loamy sand was from North Carolina. And we conducted the sorption kinetic studies following the OECD guidelines, in which we took the 5 gram of soil sample and 20 milliliter of buffered water. And that soil and water, then spiked with 5 ml of known concentration of sulfathiazole. This the soil and solutions were then shaken for 20 shaken in a gyro shaker at constant temperature, and we took the samples at 0, 2, 4, 8, 12, 24 and 48 and 96 hours. And once the samples were retrieved at this time intervals, we centrifuged the samples at 3000 G for 10 minutes and filtered through 0.45 micron syringe filter. And we analyzed those samples using a high-performance liquid chromatography. The samples, to do the sorption analysis, we use the buffered water primarily to keep the pH intact, because this compound speciates with respect to pH. As the pH increases, sulfathiazole speciates from cationic to neutral to anionic form depending on the pH level you are working in. There is also around 1 to 2% of zwitterionic sulfathiazole, but its contribution to overall sorption kinetics is very little. And we use a Phenomenex Luna 3 new phenyl hexyl column for separation with the binary gradients. The binary gradient ran from 90% A, which was mostly consisting of 90% 90 and 10% of acetonitrile. And we realized that sulfathiazole was eluted at around 6.3 minutes. This was the method, this was the calculation that we used for determining the percent sorption at a different time interval. And as you can see that sulfathiazole in Iowa sandy loam achieved equilibrium around 24 hours of time period. There was a rapid increase within first 24 hours, but then it stabilized after that. Such was not the case with regard to North Carolina sandy loam. You can see that it has not stabilized, and within 24 hours you can see roughly 50 to 60% of sorption was going on. And similar observation we noted for Missouri loam also. So traditionally the equilibration time that is used is 24 hours is not true. It is basically dependent on the soil types you are working with. Not all soil types can achieve equilibrium within 24 hours of time period, as can be seen. Approximately 90% sorption was achieved in Iowa sandy loam, and approximately 60% sorption we observed in case of loamy sand, and less than 50% in loam. We attributed this finding to the different soil properties, primarily because the Iowa sandy loam has higher percent organic carbon, and sorption phenomena is directly dependent on the percent organic carbon present in soil material. On top of it, the Iowa sandy loam also has higher amount of percent clay compared to the two other soils. So the results of the sorption kinetic studies indicate that the percent sorption is dependent on the soil types, and the 24 hours of thumb rule that is currently being used may not be appropriate. Iowa sandy loam exhibited highest percent sorption within 24 hours compared to Missouri loam and North Carolina loamy sand. In loamy sand and loam, sulfathiazole did not achieve equilibrium even after 96 hours of contact time. High percent sorption observed in loamy sand could be attributed to relatively higher percent of organic carbon compared to loam and sandy loam. Questions? Yes.
Did you sterilize your soil?
Very good question. We did not sterilize the soil, but we did air dry the soil. I mean, sun-dry the soil. I mean, I can understand there is a possibility that soil-borne microbes might degrade the drug, but we did not do
it. That could be one reason why you're seeing increase in kidney. Did you measure the salt concentration? Okay, when you measure desorption, did you measure just from the solution, or did you also measure the salt concentration?
Yes, we determined the sorbed concentration. Basically, this is the percent sorption. So we determine the mass of the test substance on soil at time Ti. So we determine the mass that was sorbed using that formula.
Extract the soil?
No.
So that's the thing. Yeah, you got it indirectly.
Yes. So you are saying that we should have conducted some desorption studies to probably establish the sorption and desorption hysteresis and to figure out... Okay. Well, one reason we didn't do is because it may potentially affect the percent organic carbon present in soil, and we believe that a percent organic sorption has a much more role to play in sorption, and so we didn't do. But that's a very good suggestion. I mean, this is the second time I have been asked. Right, and so does the clay also. You can amend the types of clay. Yes, sir.
What were your recoveries?
We didn't do the recovery calculations, sir.
Okay, well, thank you.
Thank you.